the UFO Files. This is Jerry Pippin, and we're in the car now on Highway 93. We just passed Kingman. Yes, not only UFOs can compress time, evidently, but so can we, thanks to broadcast technology. It's a long, winding road from Laughlin back up the mountain to Kingman, and now we're headed back into the desert toward Phoenix on Highway 93. I guess next stop will be Wickenburg, and then on into Phoenix. Interestingly enough, our producer, Roberta Scott, is driving, and I'm going to be continuing the broadcast now because on the telephone right now, we have Dr. Lynn Kitai, and Dr. Lynn Kitai is an expert on the whole situation of Phoenix Lights. In fact, we mentioned and alluded to it earlier that her documentary, The Phoenix Lights, it's winning awards everywhere, and kudos, and lots of sales. You can get it on a DVD. We have a link here on our website if you'd like to do that. I would recommend it. It's probably the best documentary that I've seen in a long time, or at least one of the best. There's some other good ones out there, too. And she really lays down a great, great case, including some scientific facts about the UFO sightings in Phoenix back in March 13, 1997. You know, that's not the only time they had sightings in Phoenix, either. Another big flap was January 14, 1998. And as you'll see as the show unwinds over the next few weeks, activity is still happening in Phoenix almost on a daily basis. Dr. Lynn Kitai, by the way, also has a book that you may order about the Phoenix Lights. And she's on the phone, so let's go ahead and talk to her. Hello, Dr. Lynn Kitai. How are you? How's things in Phoenix?
Great. How are you?
Okay. You just came back from New York City where you had a premiere?
Yes, we did. We actually, after last year when I came forward after 7 years of anonymity concerning being one of the key witnesses to what has turned out to be one of the most, if not the most historic mass sighting throughout the state of Arizona, when thousands of people were looking skyward to catch a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp Comet throughout the state of Arizona. They also caught a glimpse of phenomena that came throughout the state over many hours. It was actually, it looked like a parade that was coming through the state to make us aware that something's visiting us, and it was really, really extraordinary. What most people described was a mile to 2 mile wide craft, triangle craft or boomerang-shaped craft.
Bill Hamilton told me he thought it was a mile and 8 tenths. I mean, that's unbelievable.
We had incredible descriptions. Some people saw a craft. Some people actually saw lights that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't see what they were attached to. Slowly moving. We're talking 30 miles an hour. Some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed. Very low altitude. There were a number of witnesses that said they could have thrown a rock at it. It was that low. And what was really extraordinary and eerie was that it was totally, totally silent. And it affected people quite profoundly. And my husband and I were both physicians and had a very close sighting to our home in 95. And I happened to get pictures of it. I mean, we live mountainside in Paradise Valley and gated community.
Yeah, I know where it is.
I mean, there was no way that it was military. That's number one. So I always go back to the 95 sighting because that I saw up close and personal. The experience was just riveting, and I describe it fully in my book, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery that We Are Not Alone. Because aren't we? We're not only not alone in the universe, but there's so many people out there, including myself, but millions worldwide who have experienced something that is out of the ordinary, that is real to them, and it's neat. It's time we get it out in the open and we address it, we accept it, and we study it and move forward. But at any rate, for 2 years I wondered what the heck we saw. These amber orbs, which was what we saw in 95, started showing up at a distance. actually in the same location as what happened 2 months later in 97. I first started seeing them again in January of 97 and started documenting them on film again. In fact, if anybody wants to take a look at some of the pictures, I have them posted on my website, thephoenixlights.net. At any rate, it was so unnerving the second night because it was a mile wide formation. I mean, the same formation in the same location I would catch 2 months later during the mass sighting on video. But at any rate, I called around, found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport. They saw the same thing, did not show up on radar. They were close with binoculars and high-powered binoculars, and in their description, what they saw was 6 points of light, totally equidistant from each other, massive span, over a mile wide, that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to, moving very slowly in tandem behind South Mountain, which is right behind the airport. And when I asked them, so what was it, there was silence. And finally, the fellow, who's also a meteorologist, said, beats me. I mean, they had no idea what it was, and I continued documenting these up to and including and even after the mass sighting. But it wasn't until a week after the mass sighting that I realized, and I had heard on TV, because there were only four of us that took video that night that came out, because the mile-wide triangle craft was very dark, and people just couldn't get pictures of it. But at any rate, here it was on television, because I let my video out there. It's not me that's important, it's the data, and I was happy to share it with the news media, but I stayed anonymous for 7 years.
Yeah, now you know, Doctor, when you talk about the media covering this, they actually were pretty open.
Initially, here in Arizona, particularly in the Phoenix area, there were a couple people, particularly one fellow at one of the major network affiliates that actually saw the mile-wide triangle craft itself. So nobody was going to tell him that it wasn't real. And a couple of the reporters, I have to tell you, were really on top of it and did some wonderful, wonderful reports. But as I said, 1 week after the mass sighting, I learned that this is happening worldwide at a faster pace, which really blew me away. I mean, not only now had thousands of people, and we estimate over 10,000 people saw this, because everybody was outside looking up at the sky for a clear view of the Halbach Comet when this thing went right over them as well. So whoever did this seemed to do it on purpose. But at any rate, when I found out it was happening worldwide, and that other countries and cultures are much more open to it, it really sent me into a tailspin, because I knew nothing. And neither did my husband. No knowledge, no interest in this topic at all. And I started to keep a very intricate journal of what happened here, of the media response, the military response. All this is in the book. And ended up pushing my entire professional life aside for 4 years in search of a logical source and meaning for what I witnessed and photographed. I have yet to find it. If anything, it opened up a whole new world to me that I finally decided, after finding quotes from presidents and military and pilots and astronauts and really finding things worldwide that are happening absolutely identical to what happened here, even 1 month before the mass sighting in 1997, St. Petersburg, Russia had an identical sighting. A couple people got video of it. It's the same thing that I took on 35 millimeter. So at any rate, I ended up pushing my entire professional life aside for 4 years, ended up with a 750-page journal of incredible data, and even more, which we can get into. I sent me on a new road of all unexplained phenomena. But the bottom line is that I had to do a lot of soul searching on whether to come forward or not, and finally last year came forward with the book, The Phoenix Lights of Skeptics Discovery, That We Are Not Alone, which really was released to rave reviews. It's overwhelming, the response, because it's very scary to come forward. It's really taking a big risk as a physician, and I had a very nice position as chief clinical consultant at the Arizona Heart Institute Wellness and Imaging Center. And again, you know, at that point, when I was approached to do a documentary, by Steve Lant, and there's a two-minute trailer on our website, phoenixlights.net, that people can take a look at. You know, I just didn't have time to do it, and I was working full-time at the time. And my background, Jerry, I have to tell you, is for 25 years, and it makes it even more, I guess, interesting just really weird that my life's work has been for over 25 years community education on vital health issues like AIDS and teen pregnancy and substance abuse. And when this fell in my lap and I learned that reality of this topic is really vital to share, I finally decided to come forward and, of course, wanted to do a documentary as well. And getting back to your original question, we just had prior to that, when we came forward on the 8th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event on March 13th, this past March 13th with the documentary, we had sold out crowds. It was unbelievable. Just sold out. I mean, lines around the corner, they were buying standing room only. Very exciting, and people really, really appreciated the work that went into this, and also the story itself is very compelling.
Whoa, US 93 getting a little rough as we're driving toward Phoenix. I'm talking with Dr. Lynn Kitai, and she is in Phoenix already. Dr. Lynn, we'll take a break, and maybe the road will smooth out a little bit when we come back, so don't go away. This is the UFO Files, the Phoenix Lights Special, brought to you in part by Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine, true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate Magazine, available at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine. We'll be right back.
The entertainment capital of the world, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Jerry Pippin with entertainment news, views, and interviews.
The sizzle of Las Vegas. Great guest on VegasRadioShow.com. Highway's still a little bumpy, but we're going to continue the show. Dr. Lynn Kitai is on the phone from Phoenix. We're on Highway 93, just past Wickenburg, heading on into Phoenix, Arizona now. And we're going to be doing some investigating and reporting on the Phoenix Lights phenomena. In fact, we've been doing it the whole hour here. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Kitai. And forgive the noise in the background, but it's the road's a little rough. One of the things I really admire, you're a medical doctor, well-established there in Phoenix. There had to be some risk even investigating this, let alone writing a book and doing a documentary about UFOs.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to tell you, to answer your other question about my own peers, first of all, I've been involved with community education, as I said, for over 25 years, and people really appreciate that work that I've done because I've dedicated my own, you know, my own time and my own monies to get out video and workbook curriculums internationally. But besides that, you know, if I'm coming forward after 7 years of anonymity, after I've done the homework for myself just to learn, because I couldn't educate people until I became educated, but certainly, if you just look at the data, if you just look what's compiled, what can you say? I mean, it speaks for itself.
We're talking with Dr. Lynn here about her documentary and her book, Mysterious Lights in the Sky Over Phoenix. And you said also about a month before it happened in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Worldwide, and I do go into that in the book, by the way.
Do you think it's a message?
You know, when you get down to it, mm-hmm. and you really see, and that was something that, you know, I really needed to impart in the book, because not only did it affect people immediately, I mean, it's amazing when you talk to the witnesses who, by the way, the children who saw this, and they were usually the ones that witnessed it first and alerted their parents to it coming. on March 13th, 1997. The Independence Day movie had just shown the summer before, so their reaction, a lot of them, their first initial reaction, and that's something that we also go into in the documentary, Hollywood's call on it, and that were made to feel that it's a threat. They were scared, and as soon as it got close, and particularly right on top of them, there was an adult as well. There was a total transformation of attitude, of a connectedness to whatever it was, to actually the kids wanted to run after it and have their kids get in their car and follow it. I mean, a total transformation at that point. And also, what I found really intriguing is that the transformation that took place after the event, after and not only unexplained aerial phenomena, what I found is that when I was interviewing witnesses, which I did quite intensely, after the mass sighting, I found that a number of them had had their near-death experiences as a child reawakened, as I did as well, and I go into detail concerning my own near-death experience in the book. But I found that very curious, and I thought, oh, is there a connection here between all unexplained phenomena? Why would several of us have our near-death experiences reawakened by this event? And lo and behold, when I started studying it and really looking for data, and by the way, I went down to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, Arizona State University Mathematics, Geology Department, English Department, the Brooks Institute of Photography, to have my stuff analyzed, and no one had an answer. If anything, it really piqued people's interest, and many of them are in the documentary, by the way, and they really impart some incredible messages. Everyone in the documentary does. We had 40 hours of interviews that I squeezed down to 80 minutes, but at any rate, the bottom line is that there is so much information out there if you just look for it, and when I found this connection between all unexplained phenomena, we're talking near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with it. And I started calling all unexplained phenomena, UP, unexplained phenomena, an ups, because they are ups. Not only is the experience very similar, and I really break that down in the book, but the after effect is so positive. An awakening, an enlightenment that really helps you connect with the universe, to the earth, to each other. Very profound, very positive, and very important. And you asked about a message, and I have to tell you, people worldwide, witnesses worldwide, and you don't just have to have an up and an unexplained phenomena to experience this transformation. If you open your mind and your heart to learning about it, to really looking into it, you can also have this transformation, and I give recommendations in the book on how you can do that. But the bottom line is that it really, really is an important, important wake-up call that's happening worldwide with these phenomena. Now, whether, you know, I don't know what they are, but I know that they are. I mean, they could be ETs, they could be spirit world, they could be us from the future. Whatever it is, whoever is visiting us is definitely letting us know that they're here. And besides the fact, they are also letting us know that we are spiritual beings and to wake up, because we've gotten so far away from that. And, you know, I hate to give the ending of the book away, which I'm not, because there, an incident happened after 9/11. But the bottom line with the message is, wake up, people, before you destroy yourself. And that was one of the major reasons that I had to come forward, because that message, if what I'm doing, if the work with the Phoenix Lights can in any way touch each person, as these things are touching each person, very, you know, they're not dealing with the government, they're not dealing with military, they're touching each person at a time, very gently, very silently, and very, very caring, it seems, because not one person has, not one event has happened that has been harmful to anyone with these phenomena. Now, I'm not talking about other stuff, but with these particular phenomena that, you know, is, I hope that the Phoenix Lights Project, the book and the documentary can do the same, because it's really important that we wake up to what we're doing to ourselves.
You know, it is a life-changing experience. We've been doing these type of shows for decades, and that's one thing that's usually always apparent. It does affect the person.
It wakes you up that we're not alone. And that in itself is so riveting and so important because, you know, if you just feel that you're alone and we're the only ones, I mean, look at the facts here. I mean, the Hubble telescope has changed the face of time and space and gravity as we know it just in the last 10 years. And it's told us that our one galaxy, our Milky Way galaxy, and who knows how many trillions of other galaxies there are out there, but our one Milky Way galaxy is 10 to 14 billion years old. Our solar system is a very young solar system. It's only 4 to 6 billion years old. There are scientists actually postulating, this blew me away when I found this out, there are scientists postulating that there may be beings not just 100 years ahead of us, and think where we were a little over 100 years ago with the horse and buggy, and we just celebrated the centennial of the Wright brothers' flight. But there could actually be living entities, intelligent living entities out there, billions of years ahead of us. That's a pretty awesome
thought. It's mind-boggling. Sure.
Certainly, you know, if there are, then, you know, they've probably gotten through this phase of adolescence that we're in, that hopefully we can get through and mature and move forward in our own evolution.
You know, that's the message I get from almost everyone that's impacted by these sightings and starts investigating and goes down the trek, the road, the journey of research. This was probably the most documented UFO flyover ever recorded, but I've not really heard anything about radar reports.
Yeah, I mean, there was no radar. There was no radar. Obviously, the technology that whatever this thing is, whatever technology they're using, and again, some people saw it right over their heads. I mean, this was like, you know, a whole hospice group, and we have one of the hospice workers in the documentary that describes that she felt that, you know, she reached up, she could touch it. I mean, it was that close, and there were a dozen of them out there that saw the same exact thing right above them. And, you know, when you think about that, totally silent, and some people saw, we had very credible witnesses that actually were realtors that happened to be out in a whole plot where they had stakes, and it went right over their heads as well, and they looked at the stakes, and it was almost 2 miles wide. And when you think of something like that flying, right, gliding right over them, totally silent, totally silent. And then other people saw it take off at a tremendous speed, and there was also reports, by the way. I mean, there's so much to this story, and I tried to put as much in the book as I could. Obviously, 750 pages, I squeezed down to 220. I took the best of what I had found. But there were reports as well that that a crewman from Luke Air Force Base, early the next morning, like at 3 a.m., called the Peter Davenport at the UFO Reporting Center.
Yes.
And he taped it. And it sounded very, very credible. I mean, we're talking, you know, names and numbers and all kinds of stuff of the pilots that went up there, that there were actually jets sent up to intercept them. And as they got close, it just blinked out. And this is right on top of the middle of Phoenix. And that the pilot was really shaken up, and supposedly this crewman was one of the people that helped the pilot out of the plane, the jet that went out, you know, after it, and they did get gun camera film of it, supposedly. You know, I mean, what could I tell you? The technology was so far advanced that, you know, whatever, it did not show up on radar, and it did not. And this is happening worldwide, too. I mean, these... So in fact, very similar orbs that had come close to our house, and some people did see these orbs detach from the main craft, go out into the environment, and then redock with it. Is that what happened to my husband and I? Because when we went back to the 95 pictures that I got of the close sighting, lo and behold, in the background, disappearing in the same location is the same formation once again. So I have documentation several times of the same phenomena in the same location disappearing. So, you know, something's going on. There might be a gateway there. It's actually, it looks like an area There's two mountain ranges
right.
here.
You're talking about South Mountain right now,
and
right?
Estrella, by the way, Jerry, means star in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
the history of the Gila River, Gila Bend River Indian community that live in between South Mountain and the Estrella Mountains is that that name was given to those mountains because these orbs have been showing up for centuries.
South Mountain, that plays into the Phoenix Lights story pretty much. Dr. Lynn, as you know, next hour we'll be talking about South Mountain, and we'll also be arriving in Phoenix. Right now we're arriving, it looks like a gift shop and restaurant, so I think we're going to take a break. The time's got us anyway for this hour. We're going to take a break, and we'll recall and continue this conversation on the next hour as we continue into Phoenix on Highway 93. Dr. Lynn Kitai, and of course her documentary, The Phoenix Lights, is available on a DVD. You can order it right here at the website, from her website. And, hey, we're going to take a break. We'll be back next hour with another chapter of the Phoenix Light story. Roberta Scott is our location producer. Executive producer is Larry Dickin. I'm Jerry Pippin. Thanks for listening. Cheers.